Accession number 10613, rule 14.
Major Charles Burden Taylor, reel 14. At this point where you're transferred from Italian POW camps to German control and ultimately German POW camps, I wonder how you felt overall about the way you'd been treated by the Italians and what you thought of the Italians, and how you felt about the prospect of going back into German hands. You were originally captured by the Germans.
Yes, I think first and foremost the question of the prospect, I don't think it was a question of a change of going from Italian hands into German hands. At this time, if you remember, morale had been boosted because all these rumours we were going to be taken off at Rimini, the Italians are out of the war, and one couldn't help feeling that that would mean a quick withdrawal of the German forces up the Italian peninsula, which of course didn't happen, on the contrary. And so, although we didn't know it at the time, we were even farther up the creek. And with that sort of optimism, one fellow, may I say, when he saw the trucks which came to take us to the Bologna station, and he was in the trucks, he didn't speak for 4 days. He was absolutely shattered because he was halfway home the moment the Badoglio government packed in. But anyway, on the basis of the Italians, I think that basically they could have done more for us. I mentioned Croce at Chieti, that he didn't, we thought anyway, didn't pass enough of our complaints and our wishes through to the commandant, who could have done something. Or, if he did, then the commandant didn't produce. They were always very lethargic about getting our parcels through to us. There was that stupid nonsense where a platoon of searchers, about 30 characters marching, tried to march through a company of ours. One case I didn't mention where an order was given to one of our officers on parade by Croce, I think, and quite rightly he said, "I take orders from my own commanding officer," whereupon he was marched off to the cooler without any question. I may say 1,000 officers cheered madly all the way that he marched, but that side of the treatment, and also from personal experience, I've had a rifle taken off a shoulder, and if I'd taken another step, I'm quite certain I would have been shot. I think there were low-grade troops that we came across. I don't think they're fighting men. I think that we might not have got a fair crack of the whip, or as much as we could have got. I don't like them. On the other hand, I've got to admit that I don't think the Italians are fighting men, but they're jolly good engineers and they're good artists and so on, but that doesn't help you in wartime. So that it wasn't really a change of heart or a change of guesthood, Italians versus the Germans, that filled us with a certain amount of fear. It was this complete opposite from, oops, we're almost free, to, oops, we're going a long way away, which will make it difficult, more difficult for us. In fact, my particular group decided to try and get away from the train.
Would you say that the Italians were vaguely benign but incompetent, or did you think they meant you ill by their sins of omission?
I think, I would say that they were not really prepared to give. I think the ones that we had were weak. They perhaps thought they were doing what their duty was meant to be by not, in fact, treating us fairly.
So it was deliberate?
I would have thought that a lot of it must have been deliberate, because we threw enough of the Geneva Convention at them to really let them know what they should be doing. And I've got to repeat, I'm certain a number of the complaints didn't get through, or they were not acted upon. And as I said, I understood afterward that Croce had been shot in some way as a public enemy. There may have been other things that he did outside, one doesn't know.
So, getting back, you had taken the Germans took over the camp.
Yeah.
And what was their attitude? I mean, after the initial trouble.
I didn't have any experience which I could say was an attitude. We were just kept in the camp. I mean, any comment on that scale would have to be with the senior British officer or any of his staff. But the next thing was that we were going to be moved off to Germany, so we had to pack up.
The whole camp?
Oh, yes, yep. I believe some people stayed behind, or tried to stay behind, but I can't remember what exactly happened in that respect. But that was always the case. If one was going to be moved, you always had either knowledge that somebody was definitely staying behind, or there was always a rumour that somebody would stay behind, which is one way, particularly in that case, I suppose, that if the camp's going to be empty, then because you're going to be taken to another country, then the chances are that you might get away with it. On the other hand, they might raise the camp to the ground to make sure that anybody who is hiding does come out.
So you were moved.
Yep.
How did that go?
That went trucks to Bologna station and into cattle trucks. And I think there were 30 to a cattle truck.
Now this is where you made your first, it is your first, I think, real attempt to
real
escape.
Real chopper, it, yeah.
Could you tell me about it?
Well, what we decided, our little group, that we would cut a hole in the floor of the cattle truck, and what we had was in effect a knife and a pair of scissors which we serrated the edge, and it's very, very hard wood, I may say, but anyway we went through and cut a space, I suppose, about 2 foot wide by 18 inches, I suppose, and finally got through, and the train was guarded by, I would say, probably a guard between two cattle trucks. And they travelled on top, or in between. And the idea was that when the train stopped, since ever it moved, and we heard the guards get up off the ground, get up onto the top, we would try and get two or three people onto the track, just to lie flat, and let the train go over them. And then they'd run away. At that time, some bright spark, I think quite rightly, but suggested that they'd seen the front end, which was an electric train, with a cow catcher, and since we're going up through the Brenner Pass, would there be possibly another engine at the back? And if so, would it have a cow catcher? Because if it did, and anyone was lying flat, he would just be really chewed up. And so since I was the tallest, I was lowered by the feet, head first, down through this hole, and sort of waving my hands lower, 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 to try and see whether there was a cow catcher at the back end. And I wasn't, at one time, I wasn't allowed, if you will, I suppose, to go any lower. Either that or the people who were hanging on to me were getting tired, but I was yanked back up. And I said, well, all I can see are the axles of the trucks a certain way back, but I certainly can't see right the way back. So put me down again and come a bit lower, and which they did. But they stopped at a certain point, which I may say, probably thank God, but and then wouldn't let me go down again. So we still don't know whether there were any, or so was any, rather.
What happened at the end of the journey? You were going to Moosburg, weren't you?
That's right. Well, yes, there was a little incident, I think, in between,
yeah,
which one might say that one was almost sorry for. This was a captain, a German captain, because a number of people got away from this train. In fact, one truck, I gather, there was only one chap left in.
How had they done it?
It's incredible, because I don't know how they could have got the outside door open, the actual sliding door of the truck. But anyway, they did. And then when they came to an embankment, where they could jump, and being a downward slope, they wouldn't go thumpy, might break an arm or something like that, but they wouldn't really be heavily bounced. And apparently, somewhere along the line, that was what happened. But this, I suppose one shouldn't say poor German captain, but the poor devil, having lost, I think, about 80 or something like that, PW, out of an un-get-awayable from train, that we stopped at Bolzano in the Brenner, and he apparently threatened to shoot someone. And Brigadier Mountain, who was our senior British officer, I'm told, said, well, I mean, that's up to you, but for every one officer that you killed here, 10 will be killed in Britain, because word will get through. And apparently that cooled everything off, so I'm told. And off we went to Moosburg.
What about when they discovered the hole in your truck? Or did they?
Oh, yes. They came in. We got away with it. That's interesting, because we got away with it at Bolzano, because one had to be bloody careful you didn't drop the bit of wood through. But we put a bit of blanket over, and I think we had the wood sideways so it wouldn't fall through, and somebody sat on that. And I don't think they found it. I'm sorry, I don't think they found it until we got out at Moosburg, because they didn't find it at Bolzano, and I don't think we had another stop. But they came in, I may say, and counted us. And at that time we had we got anywhere, because we only got four away.
How did you get from your truck?
Yeah.
How did you get four away?
On the same basis of what we wanted to do was drop them through. And the mistake we made, it's a matter of opinion, but we found that we couldn't, the four of us, cut through on our own quick enough. So we asked the rest of the truck, and then somebody said, well, of course, if the rest of the truck's doing this, we ought to draw cards, which was a big mistake. We should have said we would go out first, because in the event, in drawing cards, I, oddly enough, came up as number 13, but the main thing is that our four people were separate, if you understand me. We were separated, and we had agreed that we'd move together. But
so they actually took the risk of the cab.
Oh yes. Yeah.
Did you ever hear what happened?
No, that I haven't heard. I was trying to remember the names of the people, and I wouldn't. What a shocking memory for names.
But
anyway.
You were prepared to take the risk.
We all were. We all were. And there's one other way, and that is that some people said, "Well, to heck with that. What we'll do, since the train will be moving slowly, we can jump out sideways between the wheels," which you could do. Might have been a bit of a hairy, scary way of going, but if they felt it was better than taking a chance, then they could do it that way.
So what happened when you got to Moosburg?
Moosburg, just the same. We, out of the cattle trucks, we had to walk a fair way from the train to the camp. Moosburg, I may say, you've probably heard from others, it's very simply repeated, it had every nationality under the sun. Russians, Americans, French.
Were they all officers, or was it a mixed camp?
Mixed, yeah. But you weren't. And then we were, in fact, herded into an area within this camp, and had the usual search. And then a little bit of light from relief, because through an interpreter, we were told that it was bad to escape, and they thought that everything would be all right, because, and here the laughter came from whatever number we were, as long as we had a mutual understanding on both sides, was literal translation as far as the journey was concerned. Anyhow, thereafter it was, I think we're on three-tier beds by now. But other than that, it was really unchanged. We were still no freedom and so on. The food, I seem to remember, was, again, not all that good. We only had what we stood up in, but, I mean, at this time we really had our suitcase apiece, that we'd got from Italy. I don't remember anything special at that time. We weren't there all that long before we were off on cattle trucks again.
How was the camp arranged in the sense of how were you separated from the other nationalities and other ranks?
Just a very simple answer, because other than going up in a helicopter, I wouldn't like to say, because we were in a number of huts with barbed wire around the grouping, if you understand me. Beyond the grouping were more huts, and then beyond that, more huts. And so we were just in a vast conglomeration of wire and huts.
Did anything, nothing particular happen of note then?
Nope.
Life was, I presume you hadn't had time to get societies and...
Oh, nothing like that. No, this really, we were down to basics. I think that's the best way of putting it. Because one would almost say that this was really a transit camp. So there were no facilities other than basics.
And so you're there a matter of how long, approximately?
Very difficult. I lose sense of time, but I would say days to weeks as opposed to months. But I think that was, we were then, at that time, I'm sure, in transit, and then to be pushed off. In fact, we were going to have another stop before we went to the final camp, which was Weinsberg.
So you went off from, you might as well take that, you went from Moosburg.
To Strasbourg, and we got a little escaping gang there.
Was this formally organised yet? Were you part of an escape committee, or was this just individual efforts, or, or little teams, unconnected?
This, somewhere along the line, there must have been either an escape committee, which had been at Bologna, which is our last camp in Italy, or merely perhaps a group round the senior British officer who basically had to be approached. I think that's an understood thing, had to be approached before any plan was put into effect. And this one's a very difficult one, because this was an old fort, and it's incredible to think of 1,200 people in this fort. An old fort, I think, of the Franco-Prussian War, where basically all below ground, and if you can understand it being not quite in a straight line, but slightly angled in the middle, like a flat V. So that was the building, but the roof was level with the ground, and one side faced onto almost an equivalent size of the building, like a whacking great trench. If that can, what would be about 10 feet deep, I suppose. And so really, we couldn't get out over the top. We couldn't get out over the ends of this big trench, or the side of it. But there was one little space, because at the apex of the V, it had a little extra bit. Straight on. They had guards at each end of the V, you can understand me, and a guardhouse at ground level above the apex. But there was a certain amount of grass and bushes at this little bit at the apex of the V where none of the guards, the two guards, could see. So if we got somebody lifted up, we'd get them into the bushes. And if they could just sit there until darkness and then go off. We got, I think, about three or four away that way. We were about, again, I think 13 is going into this, but our little group were short on the question of getting away. But the big problem, of course, was covering for, because we were counted every day, and we had to have a cover plan to make sure that they weren't discovered, and had as much time away before they were discovered as missing.
So you drew lots again before deciding?
This was, my group included a major, and he did all the negotiating with, that's why I'm a bit vague as to whether it was an escape committee or literally just the senior British officer.
And the people who went away, was there much point in getting away in the middle of, Strasbourg, with dressed in a uniform and with no money, food, or had you now started to... either get or produce?
We had, yes. Actually, if we'd gone away, we would have been, I think, roped in very quickly, because we would have had to pinch or whatever, because we didn't have really a great deal of food compared with what we'd saved up and sorted out from Weinsberg. But I think that there might have been some
Weinsberg's
money...
Weinsberg's after, though, isn't it?
After, yes. Yep, that's right. No, I think we'll...
So the plan was, you didn't have civilian clothes, for instance?
No.
So the idea was just to get out and then see what happened.
Yeah.
So it wasn't sophisticated.
But if I remember rightly, the people who did get out were very soon back in, which was annoying because we were covering up for them, and suddenly the Jerry had more than 1,200.
How did you cover up?
Well, again, we used to have to parade in this sort of big, massive trench area, and we used to do a little bit of fooling around, you know, waiting for the count and for the 1, 2, 3, so and behind at ground level, sorry, at the base of the trench level was the ground floor of the building, which included the sick parade, and we used to report so many people sick, but only put, report four sick, but only put two bodies in the sick bay, because they were counted up afterwards. But two bodies in the sick bay meant that somebody had gone there. And in fardassing around, once the count was done, we could very easily slip two through a window, and that when they went to count the sick parade, there were four people.
Were there any other escape or schemes at the time? This is at Strasbourg.
This is at Strasbourg. No, that we found this little blank spot. Because, damn me, they were, in fact, guarding 1,200 of us with basically two sentries. Because they reckoned they could see all the way along. But there was this little bit of the apex that they couldn't. I don't know if they ever really discovered how we got out. But it's a pity we hadn't stayed a bit longer to really sort of get them away. On the off chance that somebody did make a home run. But we weren't there long enough. They then tightened up a bit, and they brought in Bismarck Joe. Fort Bismarck, that was the name of this fort. A little Feldwebel with an Alsatian dog, because if you can understand it, the guardhouse above this apex, then to get into the building at ground level went right over the big ditch into the building by this wooden bridge. And of course we were paraded underneath here until one day when I think they discovered these people going away. Anyhow, Bismarck Joe, this little Feldwebel, came on with a very, very noisy Alsatian, and he was up on the bridge, and we were cheering and saying, woof, woof, and so on. And until he pulled his pistol out and fired twice in the air, we thought, you know, discretion being the better part of valor, so we quietened down. And I mention that purely because there is an instance in Weinsberg camp, because this time we'd left, we were about to leave Fort Bismarck to go to Weinsberg, and of course we would have then said cheerio to Bismarck Joe. And suddenly one day on one of the counts at Weinsberg, they used to come in, we would have to parade, and then the officer would come up, and then the warrant officer, the Feldwebels, would come to count each company, and we used to get to know these just by sight only. And then one day, obviously Bismarck Joe had been posted to Weinsberg, and he suddenly came in to count one of the companies, and of course we all recognized him, and of course 1,200 people immediately went off into barky barky woof woof woof. To his undying credit, he gave a beaming smile, but he didn't have his dog with him that time.
Why did Bismarck Joe attract your attention so much?
On this particular, well, the main
Strasbourg, why had he got a nickname and the others not?
Well, I don't know what. He might have been in charge of the whole place, I don't know. But, no, the main thing is that if you could imagine, you know, in this sort of big dugout area, you're very much below ground level, and if you like, you know, away from it all. I mean, when the sun set in Strasbourg, it had already set in our little pit, if you understand me. And so nobody really stopped on this bridge, which we could look up to, which is in theory the only way out of the place, other than this little area that we'd found. And we were on parade, and I think it must have been the time when either they discovered that they were short, or somebody had been recaptured, and therefore they discovered they'd been made fools of, that two or whatever it was, people had got out of this escape-proof Fort Bismarck. And he came onto the bridge and wanted us to get into order, get into line, into threes for counting and so on and so forth, and we just ignored him. And the dog was barking all the time. So it was one of those occasions when he was exerting his supreme authority. And so he promptly got christened Bismarck Joe.
So that's when he got
the name, yep.
How long were you at Fort Bismarck?
Oh, very short time. It was days, running into perhaps 2 or 3 weeks at the most.
And then you went to Winesburg?
Yep.
Do you remember anything about the journey to Winesburg? I mean, was it
not really, no, uneventful. It's the usual business of into cattle trucks and taken to Winesburg and a short walk up from the station to the camp, which was very close to the village of Winesburg.
And was this on what pattern of camp was this? What was it?
Very similar to the others, wooden huts. About 100 or 120 per hut, corridor and rooms off, and certain minimal washing facilities at the end of the bungalow, and also loos. I think it could have been, actually, it could well have been army barracks, or, you know, temporary wartime army barracks.
So you were at this camp for approximately a year, so you got
well,
there in 44, left sometime in 45.
That's right, yeah.
How many prisoners were there, about?
Oh, as far as I could see, we always seemed to go around as roughly 1,000 and 200 other ranks, which was about the same in this camp.